Hey everybody, welcome to Crossroads. I am the Reverend Brian Blair. Thank you for joining us today. You are listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. My guest today is Dr. Bill Cook. Hello, Dr. Bill.
Hi, Brian.
Great to have you on. Just a couple of quick announcements about things that are going on. You know, I'm the priest over at St. Mark's Church here in Storrs. We're set on the campus of UConn. It is the season of Lent, and so a lot of people who are Christian during the season of Lent try to bump up their spirituality just a bit. We've got something for you if you want to learn a little bit more about the church on March 20, 27, and April 3, there's free food starting at 6 o'clock. Come on by, check it out on the church's website to learn a bit more about the event. Also, we're doing a flip-flop drive. I want to thank Lyman Nuttall, who goes to our church and who is also a student here at UConn. He is doing this wonderful charitable event. You want to stop by the church, drop off some flip-flops, either new or used, I think. And they go to people who might need them for various things. So it's a wonderful charitable way to help out in the area. Well, I hope everyone's doing all right out there. Again, I'm here with Dr. Bill Cook. Bill, the big question on this show is, how does your faith life intersect with your everyday life? So how about we ask you first, since I already started talking about Lent, do you mind telling us a little bit about what your faith background is?
Sure, Brian. Well, I was born into a Roman Catholic family and baptized as a baby and grew up within that tradition. To be honest with you, I wasn't always drawn to church. A lot of times I was bored, but I always felt there was something more. I felt there was something to faith. So even though I did have some times when I would skip church as a kid, if I could, I always felt there was something there. And so my life has been about trying to answer that question, what is that something more? And
I like that. You know, the other part of the show is how does your faith life intersect with your everyday life? We introduce you as Dr. Bill Cook. Are you a professor?
Well, actually, I'm a retired professor. I was a professor for 27 and a half years at Westfield State in Massachusetts. And prior to that, I had been an adjunct at Rutgers, and I'd also taught high school in New York City. So I've spent a big part of my life teaching, yes.
What did you teach?
Well, in New York City, I taught basic skills, and then as a professor, I taught about criminal justice. My dissertation was about the psychological effects of terrorism, so my primary focus was on terrorism, but I also taught about ethics and criminological theory, things of that nature.
Very nice. You started this with the first question about your faith. So how, with your faith life, your journey that you described a little bit about, you came to a life of teaching criminal justice. Did one inform the other?
Yes and no. In a sense, as I mentioned a minute ago, the question about is there something else going on that we can't see has always been a question I've paid a lot of attention to. You know, about a week ago, they had a special on about Mr. Rogers.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Rogers used to like a quote from The Little Prince, and that's that book by Exupéry. And the quote that he had embroidered and I guess had on his wall in his office and was very dear to him was, "What is essential is invisible to the eye." And I've always had this sense that I had to search for that invisible side of things. And once in a while, I would bump into it. Earlier, I was telling you a story about when I was a teenager. When I was 17, I had a great aunt who passed away, and she was very dear to me. She was like my mother. And I went to high school in New York City and used to travel an hour and a half each way. So I had lost touch with my local friends, and some of them were, well, angels maybe with slightly crooked halos. And one afternoon, they were sitting in a park drinking, and I thought, well, I'm going to go join them. And I had just gotten there, and I had a can of beer, and I just had a sip, and they decided to go to the store to buy more. And as I got into their car, the only place for me to get in was to straddle the stick shift, and it was a convertible. Well, I felt for my wallet, and it wasn't there. So I said, well, look, go pick me up a six-pack. When you come back, I'll pay you for it. Mm. And I went back into the park with some other fellas, and we started looking around for the wallet, couldn't find it. Then suddenly I discovered it was in my back pocket. And I can't explain that, because having grown up in New York City and taken the subways, I always knew where my wallet was, uh-huh. because if I didn't, there'd be a pickpocket who would.
Right.
In any case, the car didn't come back for a little while. It turned out that they'd had an accident and a pole had come down right where I would have been sitting.
Wow.
So I think there are these moments in our lives that we can't explain and yet somehow influence us and perhaps influence our destiny. I'm not sure I would be alive today had I been in that car. And so those are the questions that I've encountered that I've tried to answer. Now, when I was a student, of course, I found that there was this dichotomy set up. Many people look at faith as kind of superstition.
Mm.
And I wondered about that. I was a psychology major. I did a psych master's in. Most of the people I was around saw faith as something retrograde. But as time went on, I began to realize that there's more than one way of knowing things. Let's face it, I found out I had cancer a few years ago, skin cancer. I wanted to go to a doctor who did good science.
Uh-huh.
No doubt about that. But at the same time, I believe there's other ways of knowing things, and that is through intuition. And so I'm not sure that this dichotomy that you're either going to be superstitious or you're going to be enlightened is a valid one. And I think we need to integrate. And so in my life, what I've tried to do is to pay attention to patterns that I see and look to try to understand, is there something bigger?
You use the term intuition. Like, how do you use that term?
That's a good question. Well, in my experience, intuition, I think, could just be described as a sense sometimes of something. For example, once before I had an accident, I just had a sense. I just started thinking about accidents with my car.
Mm.
This is a few minutes before it happened. So in that sense, that's one experience of intuition I've had. I also think that from a faith perspective, perhaps that's one of the ways that the Spirit of God communicates with us, that there are a sense that we get of something, perhaps an attraction or a repulsion that we may feel toward either an event or a choice, which is, it's a way of discerning, that we need to discern. Is there a guidance that we're receiving? So I guess intuition could run the range from just a gut feeling mm-hmm. to perhaps something more divine.
You were talking a moment ago about this dichotomy that's been created. Do you have any experiences where you've had to work through that kind of dichotomy that you find where people sort of, I don't know what the word might be, bifurcate or chop up a person's whole integrated self or the way that we operate as people into a variety of ways?
Well, I would say yes. When I was a graduate student and I did my internship in forensic psychology, I did it at one of the teaching hospitals for Mount Sinai Medical School. And what I found there was that I worked on the psych wards, was that at that time, this is in the 1970s, really wasn't much room for faith. It was not really discussed.
Mm.
And yet, in a sense, I thought it was kind of an elephant in the room that nobody was paying attention to
mm-hmm.
because so many people report having spiritual experiences. And many people feel guilt about their relationship to God. Sometimes when they get sick, they feel like God is punishing them. So to ignore faith, I think, was missing something important. I'm a little contrary, so I always wanted to be, although I'm very interested in faith, I've always wanted to work in a secular environment, so I have. And as a professor, I had an interesting experience. I never made any bones about my faith. I certainly didn't proselytize in the classroom, but I never hid who I was. And after 9/11, I was a reservist, and I was activated. I spent a year away. And when I was leaving the Navy, a Navy chaplain gave me an icon, a religious image. And that icon became symbolic to me of a whole year's experience. And I thought, I'm going to put that up in my office at work. Well, within a week of that being on the wall, the vice president and the dean came in to inspect it. And, of course, they stayed there. Both of them, yeah. It was a command performance. But I felt really, in a sense, that underlying that was this assumption that religion is just invalid, and that it's a backward kind of thing and not suitable for an academician. And yet I believe that if we're academics, we need to ask questions and not be afraid to follow where they might lead, even if it makes us uncomfortable.
Oh, that's a great point. Asking questions and following where they lead, whether they make you feel comfortable or not. You talked about being in Elmhurst, right? That's Elmhurst General.
Elmhurst,
Queens, which is a public hospital
In
the 70s in New York. So that's where the police bring criminals. And That's a very busy place, and it could be chaotic. You had this experience there, and you said that your sense of things was that people sort of split the idea of faith from how everyday people really behaved. Did you bring that up at all? Did you have any experiences where you tried to address that?
Well, actually, I was a lowly intern. And in a hospital, your status is determined by the length of your white coat. So as an intern, I had a short white coat that was more like a blazer. So that meant no questions. However, I was very fortunate because there was a chief psychologist there who was a clinical psychologist whom I studied under while I was there. And he was a highly intelligent man. His background was that he was Jewish, but he was not religious. But he was an open-minded person. And we quite often had conversations about philosophy. And at that time, I was wrestling quite a bit with trying to integrate spirituality with psychology. I think, you know, there's always been a stream within psychology, Jungian psychology, for example, that accepts the more religious side of things. I think today, perhaps, I'm not as conversant with the field, but I think there's more openness than there was at that time. At that time, I think people were still feeling the Freudian theory was very significant. That was the dominant theory. And of course, Freud saw religion really as a neurotic impulse. So I think we've come a long way since then.
Well, you know, if you go to church on Sunday, you might still believe that.
Well, human nature being what it is.
You use the term wrestling. What are you wrestling with these days?
Well, I think what I'm wrestling with now is how to use time differently. I became retired about 2 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's a different way of being. You know, when you're working, you have a structure. You have to follow certain tasks you need to do. When you retire, it's a different experience. So sociologists have a word they call liminal. Comes from the Latin word limen, which means threshold. So I sort of see myself in a liminal space right now, transitioning, learning how to use time differently, learning to have other goals and to identify differently. When I walked around the campus the first time I was here a month or two ago, I felt a twinge because the semester was starting and I wasn't teaching class. Today, I'm sort of more in that liminal space and just enjoying being here, but not feeling like I need to go to class.
No twinges?
No twinges.
Good. You clearly have given a lot of thought to your faith and how to integrate it into your everyday thinking, your everyday life. Has there been a person or anything that you've come across that's really been a major influence?
Well, I'd say there would be a series of them. I think growing up, I had great aunts who had come from Europe, and they had deep faith. And I was very impressed with their courage and their strength. Each of them had suffered terrible things. One lost her husband and her child in a gas leak. You know, it was in the 1920s, those old-fashioned stoves. Mm. And she went to work, came home, and her husband and child had died. They survived those things. They were tough. And yet they had great heart, and they were very generous. So I think seeing that made me think, gee, there must be something to this more than just superstition. There's some kind of grounding that they have. And I've been fortunate in my life that I've met people of faith. I wouldn't say that I've had a great gift of faith, but I've seen it in others, and that's helped me to kind of hobble along. I've also met some extraordinary people. I think I told you the story. My wife, Susan, had a friend who was dying of cancer whom we went to go visit. And while we were visiting her, in came a woman and her husband, and this woman was like something out of Central Casting. She was wearing a long blue dress, and she had rosary beads on her tied around her waist, and she had gloves on without any fingers. And I thought, oh boy, she's out on a pass. But the thing was, there was something about her, and I realized very quickly that there was a holiness about her. And what I mean by a holiness is there was a sense of peace, and there was a goodness and a warmth. And I thought, you know, this lady has a get-up on, but she's clearly has some authority, and she has a goodness that I would like to know more about. So anyway, we ended up finding out that she actually was a person who led prayer services and prayed for people for healings. So we decided to go see her the next day. And the reason she wore gloves, I was told, is she had something which is known as the stigmata. The stigmata is first associated with Francis of Assisi, and this is when a person has an experience of I guess you would call it a spiritual experience, where they begin to manifest the wounds of Christ. In any case, we went to her prayer service. She prayed on me, and I got hit with lightning. The only way I can describe it was like a bolt of lightning.
Uh-huh.
And in time, I learned that I had had a back problem that seems to have been corrected. So I have come across people like that. I can't explain who they are. I also found others. I came across another fellow who had the gift of knowledge, as they call it, and he could tell you things about yourself and give you prophecies. And the prophecies he gave me turned out to be true.
So, wow.
What I've come to understand is that, as Zupere said, what perhaps is essential is invisible to the eye. So my faith practice has been trying to understand this and experience it in my own life. One more thing I'd like to say, too. I'm very grateful for what I learned from psychology. I think there are many good tools that we can learn from psychology how to live a healthier life. But I also think that there's something deeper that needs to be attended to as well, and that is the faith experience. And integrating those two, I think, helps one have a really healthy and fruitful and happy life.
Well, I like that you used the word integration. You know, so the big question on the show is, how does one's faith life inform one's everyday life and vice versa? So really that is kind of a question about integration. What else would you say about that idea of people being wholly integrated?
I think it's something we all have to work at. And there are different ways to go about that. I think one important thing is to take time every day to stop and listen. And I think people are called to faith in different ways. I am Christian, but I don't expect everyone to be Christian. I mean, so part of it is, what tradition is a person born into? What do they feel drawn to? I know I've had good friends who became Buddhists. And for them, of course, Buddhism, although there can be an argument about whether it's a religion or not, for them, it's a spiritual practice. And it's led to a fuller, more enriched life. So I think taking time every day and setting aside that time and having the discipline to either get up and meditate or study scripture, or whatever your practice is, but having some way every day of centering oneself to kind of find that moment of peace And then that strength, which then can radiate out into the rest of the day.
Thank you. We're going to take a break just a half a second here to do some station identification. It's WHUS 91.7 Storrs. This is the show Crossroads, where we ask our guests about the intersection of their faith life and their everyday life. Just very quickly, we've got a couple of guests coming up I want to announce. March 20th, next week, we have two economics professors from right here at UConn, a married couple. Their specialties are economics and the environment and economics and sustainable energy, and I think that'll be a very interesting conversation. And then if you want to go on to IMDb and check out Jack Gilpin, he happens to now be an Episcopal priest, and he's going to come talk to us April 1st about how his spirituality and his acting career are integrated. That's Jack Gilpin, April 1st. Bill, returning to you. You are very good, and you actually came a little bit prepared today, and I see a couple of note cards in front of you, which I really appreciate. We've got about 7 minutes left. You got some great stories, great references and ideas. Is there anything that you walked in today feeling like it would be fun to talk about? Maybe something on those note cards.
Sure, Brian. There's one thing I want to talk about, and that is the difference between belief and faith.
Sure.
Many people understandably have trouble with beliefs. For example, did Jonah get swallowed by a whale? By the way, yesterday there was a story on the internet about a diver who apparently got swallowed by a whale and then spit out.
Oh, I have to look that up. That's terrible.
But
is the diver okay?
Yeah, fine.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to do that again.
Out the blowhole? Was it sort of like getting shot out of a cannon?
I think he was just spit out.
I'm going to look that up.
But I want to read a quote from Einstein.
Sure.
In 1930, there was a rabbi who sent Einstein a telegram saying, "All right, look, do you believe in God?" And Einstein replied, "The most beautiful emotion we can experience is the mysterious. It is the fundamental emotion that stands at the cradle of all true art and science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead, a snuffed-out candle. To sense that behind anything that can be experienced, there is something that our minds cannot grasp, whose beauty and sublimity reaches us only indirectly. This is religiousness. In this sense, and in this sense only, I am a devoutly religious man." Mm. So I think today, another thing we all have to think about is the difference between belief and faith.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, I think, have trouble with beliefs, and that's okay because not all those things should be taken literally. In fact, in the ancient world, as you know, the early church fathers talked about the allegorical meaning and metaphorical meaning of Scripture. I think we have more of a problem with people trying to see it literally. But it comes back to that idea of faith. Harvey Cox wrote a book called The Future of Faith, and he points out that belief really has to do with ideas, whereas maybe what we should be talking about is faith, a trust in something more, and searching for that something more that we can trust in and believe in and have it guide our lives.
I think that my understanding of when Christian scripture, meaning both the Old and the New Testament in a Christian Bible, talk about the word faith, it does mean trust.
Right.
And I think that we've taken it from this idea of a sense that we can rely on something greater than ourselves,
right,
and turned it into a belief system. And
right,
that that's when things started to go awry.
Right.
And I really appreciate it that you bring up the idea that there is a difference between the notion of what we now call belief and the notion of trust.
Right.
So going back to that idea of being integrated, do you think that you had begun really with the conversation about how some see faith as superstition?
Mm-hmm.
But now you're talking about this idea of trusting in something that's beyond ourselves. So how do you sort of reconcile the notion of what some of us might refer to as superstition and the idea that people trust in something that we really can't see?
Well, I think that's a difficult question, and some people make fun of it and say, oh, you have an imaginary friend.
I do, by the way.
I think it comes through experience. I think we have to take a gamble and try it.
Mm.
And I think once we try it, if it's true, it'll prove itself true. And if it's not, it'll lead you to a dead end. If it leads to peace, and you're onto something good. My father was the third person I want to mention who had a great influence on me. My father wasn't what you'd call a religious guy, but he had deep faith.
Mm.
He was a New York City firefighter. He had survived D-Day. And he believed that he was in God's hands. And, you know, he survived hospice care. Actually, they had to extend it three times.
Hmm.
And part of it was that he felt very dedicated to his grandchildren, and he didn't want to leave. They needed him at that point. And so I think in his life, I saw a great example of somebody who had great trust, but wasn't necessarily really religious.
Right.
And I think each of us needs to roll the dice and try it. And as I say, if it has goodness and it leads to peace, then why argue with that?
I like the idea that you come to this conclusion where it's, you know, land on really a sense of inner peace, and then you know that you're on the right track.
Right.
I worry sometimes when I see people sort of creating these lists of what faith is supposed to accomplish for us that really sort of seem almost external rather than internal. And I like that you land on the notion that what happens in our interior life is actually evidence of what's going on sort of all around us through a higher power, if you will, God, whatever one might believe. But the idea that you don't necessarily see this existence, this being, this energy face to face is really evidence of it. And that further evidence of it is that when we are trusting enough, or I like that you use the word gamble, we take that gamble to trust, the result is that we feel better.
Right. And there's one other idea I'd like to add, if I have a second. Back to Mr. Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
One of his favorite concepts apparently came from a professor of his, and his professor called a guided drift.
Mm.
The idea was that we plug into the flow of things, sort of God's grace.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the same time, as we're going along, we kind of make adjustments. Obviously, we have minds, and we're given these gifts to use them. So there's this interaction between being plugged into this bigger thing, this sense of destiny, but also using our gifts to help guide the canoe along, so to speak.
I wonder about that idea in terms of each of us is some sort of kitchen appliance. You might be a blender, I might be a toaster oven, whatever works best.
Sure.
And we work best when we plug into the energy.
Right.
And are we going to plug into the energy?
Right.
Well, this has been a great conversation, Bill. I really appreciate everything you contributed.
Thank you, Brian.
I'm a fan of Mr. Rogers, so I'm glad you brought him up. That's for sure. Well, everybody, this has been Crossroads. I'm glad you joined us today. You could check out my website, revblair.com, R-E-V-B-L-A-Y-E-R, or follow me on Twitter, at Rev Blair. And that way you can access both the podcast and the YouTube channel to check this out later tonight if you were not able to listen right now. Obviously, if I'm making this announcement to you, you were able to listen right
but
now.
But we still like you just the way you are.
Like you just the way you are. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate that. We hope everybody has a wonderful day. We hope you will join us next week at this time for our next edition of Crossroads. Did you know?